Our next guest is Brian Dumain. Dumain's a contributing editor at Fortune magazine and an award-winning journalist. According to a recent Georgetown University survey, more Americans respect Amazon than the FBI, Congress, the media, and organized religion. Indeed, 51% of American households attend church, and 62% have Prime memberships. In the best of times, the company's presence in our daily lives is inescapable as Amazon gains many invaluable lessons from the COVID-19 outbreak. The company will not only become more ubiquitous in the decades ahead. So what does Amazon want, and should businesses and consumers willingly step in front of the wave, duck it, or try to ride it? Brian Dumain explains the answers to these questions in his new book, Bezonomics. And we welcome you, Brian, to Cool Science Radio.
Oh, thanks a lot, John. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. And maybe we can begin with Jeff Bezos' management style. He has some specific principles. Can you take us through those?
Sure. I'd be happy to. As I laid out in my book, Bezonomics, Bezos has three tenets that he lives by. One is customer obsession, the other is extreme innovation, and the third is long-term thinking. Now, a lot of management executives will say they believe in those things, and some of them have actually become management cliches, but Bezos really lives and breathes those ideas, and he's inculcated them into the organizational culture at Amazon in a way that I've seldom seen in my 30 years of covering big business for Fortune magazine. And what makes Bezos different in a way is his search for the truth. I mean, it sounds lofty, but what he's actually getting at is he wants to get all the data necessary to make the right decisions so that Amazon can keep growing its customer base, it can keep innovating, and it can prepare itself for a prosperous long-term future. And some of the executives, when I visited the offices out in Seattle, had a sign on their office which said, "In God we trust, all others must bring data." And that's partially because Bezos keeps digging for the truth. He makes anyone who has a new idea for innovation or a new product or service to write what's called a six-pager. This is a six-page memo which needs to be written like a press release, and it has all the facts about the project, what the item should cost, how many should be manufactured, why customers would want this product, what the market is like, et cetera, et cetera. And the beginning of each meeting before Bezos would discuss a six-pager, he makes everybody sit down for 20 minutes and read the six-pager. And then the fun begins. He gets into this very, at times, confrontational type of meeting where he's pushing people on the facts, and how do you know that, and where did that come from? And what happens is that more times than not, Amazon ends up with a great new idea like the Kindle or Alexa or Fire TV that really hits the public's imagination and has made Amazon the innovative powerhouse it is today.
Yeah, and we also know he does not suffer fools, and he doesn't suffer office politics, does he?
No, and that's part of his penchant for the truth. I mean, he just feels that office politics are a big waste of time, and that's why he has this focus on the customer. He said, just focus on the customer. Don't focus on the competition. Don't focus on internal politics. Everything Amazon does should be toward the customer to have cheaper products or faster delivery or better services like Prime Video, which Prime members get, or streaming music services, that sort of thing. Just constantly make the customer's life better and don't waste time on corporate communications or internal politics.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, our guest is Brian Dumain. He's a contributing editor at Fortune magazine, and he's written a new book, Bezonomics, as in Jeff Bezos. I noticed you left out the S there. It just didn't fit in the flow of the title of the book, right, Brian?
That's right. That's right, Lynn.
So your tagline is how Amazon is changing our lives and what the world's best companies are learning from it. What are the top few things? I mean, customer obsession, it's something that any large company should have at the forefront of priorities. But what are some of the more nuanced things that companies are learning, and what are they learning to leave behind that Amazon is doing?
Right. That's a great question, Lynn. And I think, you know, researching my book, Bezonomics, one of the things that really surprised me was this notion called the flywheel. And that Bezos adopted back after the dot-com bubble in 2001. At that point, the company was nearly out of business, and its stock had gone from $107 a share down to $6 a share. Barron's wrote a cover piece. It was titled Amazon.bomb. The company was about to run out of money. But Bezos turned to this concept of a flywheel, and at a meeting where they first discussed it, he wrote a diagram of it, which is basically a virtuous cycle. And it starts with the customer. You know, you focus on the customer. You do everything possible to make the customer's life better. And then what that does is that will attract more people to your site. And if you attract more people, you're going to attract more of what Amazon calls these third-party sellers, who are entrepreneurs, who offer products on the site. Today, they account for nearly two-thirds of all products sold on Amazon. And when you attract more of these third-party sellers, you get this economy of scale. You get more revenue, you get bigger, and that allows you to use that money to drop prices for your customers or give them better service, which attracts more customers, which attracts more third-party sellers, which gives you an economy of scale, which attracts more customers. So this cycle just keeps going around and around, and Bezos used this to drive Amazon's growth. But what's really interesting is that over the last 10 years or so, Bezos has been taking the flywheel and applying artificial intelligence to it. So the flywheel, in a sense, is gaining momentum on its own. So a lot of the decisions, and this is where other companies could really learn from Amazon, a lot of the decisions that executives used to make at the company, such as how many products to order, in what size, in what color, where in their vast network of fulfillment centers to send these products, those are all being made by AI algorithms now. And every time one of these algorithms makes a decision along those lines, it learns and it gets smarter and it does it better the next time. And so prices keep getting cheaper for consumers. Delivery keeps getting faster for consumers. Services like Alexa keep getting smarter and better for consumers. So I think the real takeaway here is it's a business model for the 21st century. It's, you know, using this flywheel construct and then applying artificial intelligence to it and having your business grow and improve almost on its own.
Yeah, I'm wondering how with AI, we know that one of the shortcomings of AI is, in fact, that human component. And I would imagine that Jeff Bezos already has that figured out in terms of keeping in that human element, trying to use intuition that a computer may not have yet, artificial intelligence, isn't often there because, after all, a human has to program and create the artificial intelligence to begin with. Where is he on that? Where is Amazon on that?
Well, I think that he's taking the more routine decision-making processes in the company and applying artificial intelligence to that. I mean, a good example of what artificial intelligence cannot do, and you're absolutely right about making that point, is during this pandemic, when Amazon saw this huge surge in orders, it was trying to figure out, how do we handle this and how do we try to keep our employees safe while delivering all these products to their hundreds of millions of customers around the world. And the first thing Bezos did was to assemble his S team. It stands for senior team. And these are top executives who've been with him for sometimes a decade or more. They know how Bezos thinks. They know how he builds the business. And they got together and they made the big decisions on how to deal with the pandemic. And they're the ones who made the decision about, you know, we're only going to send essential goods at first, right? And we're going to de-emphasize non-essential goods. And they're the ones who decided to spend $4 billion to try to make their fulfillment centers safer and their delivery drivers safer. So those are all human decisions. And, you know, I'm not saying corporations can be run entirely by algorithms. But once those human decisions were made, it was those AI algorithms that allowed Amazon to respond quickly to all that demand in the pandemic. Their sales in a matter of months rose by $75 billion. I mean, that's a huge amount of business to handle for any company. And they had to hire 175,000 new employees. And they were able to do that quickly in part because they had automated their hiring process. So it's a combination. You still need humans to make those smart, insightful, 50,000-foot-high decisions. But once those decisions are made, you turn to the AI algorithms, which can execute them quickly and more efficiently than humans could.
We're speaking with Brian Dumain. He has written Bezonomics, How Amazon is Changing Our Lives and What the World's Best Companies Are Learning from It. He took 3 years. He researched the book for 3 years, spoke to 150 employees of Amazon, people that knew Jeff. You mentioned earlier Marketplace, which is third-party sellers, extraordinarily important to Amazon, two-thirds of Amazon's business. Yet its beginnings were disastrous. And you talk in the book about his resourcefulness. Maybe you could take a minute and tell us about his relationship with his grandfather and how that informed him for being resourceful and making Marketplace successful.
Absolutely, John. In the part of my book, Bezonomics, where I go back and look at Bezos's life, he spent a lot of time during the summers on his grandfather's ranch in South Texas called the Lazy G. And they would build irrigation systems, build fencing. They built a prefab house. They even restored an old Caterpillar tractor, which was on the farm. And Bezos says that what he took from that was a real sense of resourcefulness. You know, sort of a stick-to-itiveness. You know, you do a job, you're focused on it, you get it done, you don't give up on it. And that came in very handy, he said, when they were trying to launch what today is the Marketplace, in which I said earlier, you know, accounts for nearly two-thirds of all of Amazon sales today. And he started out by forming a separate website from Amazon.com, where people would bid on items that entrepreneurs were selling, and a lot like eBay, and no one came. It was a total flop. Now, most executives would have just given up at that point, but he said, well, let's start a separate website and make it one where the entrepreneurs set the prices, and he tried that, and that totally flopped. And again, most people would have given up by then, but Jeff Bezos is a very resourceful person, and on the third try, he said, we're going to take these third-party sellers, these independent merchants, and put them on the Amazon site. And he got tremendous blowback from other executives at the company saying, you're going to ruin our brand image. How are we going to control quality of the items being sold, et cetera, et cetera. But he went ahead and he did it, and that became Marketplace. And it's the biggest part of Amazon's e-commerce business now and the most profitable part of its e-commerce business. So that's the kind of resourcefulness he learned on his grandfather's ranch that he now applies to running Amazon.
Brian, I'm from Boston, and I was amazed to learn that across the river from where I lived, they have 10,000 employees just working on Alexa. This is a pretty significant product for them as they're trying to make Alexa ubiquitous across the planet. Maybe you can tell us about where Alexa may be showing up next and how important this is to Amazon.
Right, John. So Alexa is the centerpiece of Amazon's effort to create, as one executive told me, an operating system for life. And what he meant by that is Bezos wants Amazon to be ubiquitous in all our lives. I mean, that to me sounds a little scary, but it's creating a lot of convenience for consumers out there. And so Alexa, you can ask her to play television shows, and they could be on Amazon Prime. You can ask Alexa to play music. You can ask Alexa to run your security system at home. You can ask Alexa to tell you who's ringing your smart doorbell. You can ask Alexa in your car to order you a cup of Starbucks coffee, which you can pick up on your way home, or a grocery order from Amazon's Whole Foods stores. So the idea and the reason Bezos has 10,000 employees working on Alexa is it's a new interface for the internet that I think eventually will largely replace the keyboard and will make it easier for people to use all of Amazon's services. So in that sense, it's an operating platform for life. And I think it suggests that Amazon still has a lot of growth ahead of it in the future.
You talk in your book about a conversation that you heard of Jeff Bezos talking about the life cycle of large corporations as being 30 years. And I'd like for you to qualify or clarify that. Now we know that Amazon was founded, I believe, in 1994. And so, coming up on that 30-year life cycle, is it all about reinvention, or is it about, suspending what you've done and starting anew, or not at all?
Well, Lynn, I think it's about constantly innovating and constantly moving forward. Now, Bezos said that he had an all-hands meeting, and he said most companies only survive for 30 years. Amazon is, more than 25 years old, and if we're not careful, we're going to fail too. And what he was getting at was a philosophy he has called Day One, and he really believes in Day One. He has since he started Amazon. As a matter of fact, his high-rise where he has his headquarters office is called the Day One building in Seattle. And what Bezos means by Day One is that everybody has to show up at work with the same energy, the same enthusiasm, the same set of fresh ideas that an entrepreneur would have on the first day he's launching his company. And Bezos says that if you lose that, then atrophy sets in, and you start becoming too internal focused, and you get into, as we said before, his hated office politics. So you have to take this Day One attitude and make sure it stays alive, which is really hard to do in a company the size of Amazon, which has 800,000 employees and sales last year of $280 billion, second largest company in the United States after Walmart. So I think that's what Bezos was getting at when he was telling his staff that he was afraid that Amazon was going to fail. He was afraid they were going to move from Day One and all that energy involved in a day one attitude to what he says is day two, which leads to atrophy and eventually death. So he's, you know, he's a good leader in that sense, in that he doesn't take anything for granted. I mean, given what Amazon's stock has done recently, and, you know, given how fast they're growing for a big company, it would be easy for everybody to rest on their laurels, and he wants to make sure that they don't.
Interesting. Full disclosure, my 25-year-old son works in Seattle at Amazon as a software developer, and it's interesting, whenever he comes home to Park City, Utah, people always try to get him to talk about how horrible it is to work at Amazon. And it's interesting because his experience has been very positive. It has bolstered his creativity and his solutions-based way of looking at things, and they're very pro professional development. In fact, they expect you to continue to improve yourself and improve the job that you're doing, and it's all very dynamic. And so I mention that because you can see how this filters down Jeff Bezos, you know, from his all hands meetings, it filters down to the people who are just coming out, you know, as young college graduates and working there.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. Listen, working at Amazon is not for everybody, right? It's a very tough environment, a very demanding environment. Bezos is famous for hiring super smart people and driving them really hard. And I think some of the bad press Amazon gets is from people who can't hack it there. And they go out, and I mean, there's a famous New York Times story where, I mean, if you believed every word in that story, no one would ever work at Amazon. But when I interviewed a lot of people who worked there who used to work there, most of the people said it was a challenging, a difficult, but a really great experience because they learned a lot and they grew. So, I think what you're saying about your son is absolutely correct. I mean, it's not an easy place to work, but I think with most hard things in life, it can be rewarding.
Brian, we only have about a minute and a half left, but you speak in the book about the test for antitrust, which is the singular question, is a company hurting the consumer? And of course, Bezos has said thousands of times, we want to have cheaper products and we want to get them to you faster. So they're not hurting the consumer, but politicians have been standing up lately and taking shots at Amazon, saying that maybe they should be broken up. Why is that?
Yeah, John, you're absolutely right. Amazon has become a target for politicians, and you know, some are going after them for anti-competitive practices. Others are saying they're too big and they need to be broken up. And you know, I have a whole chapter on that in my book, Bezonomics, and I try to be very objective about it. And I looked at the data. I guess as Jeff Bezos would, right? And the argument that they're too big right now is hard to prove if you look at the numbers. And the reason is that, yes, they control 38% of online retail in the United States, but that only accounts for 5% of all retail in the United States, because brick-and-mortar retail is still 90% of all retail. I mean, that's obviously changed since the pandemic, but when we're on the other side of this crisis, I think we're going to return to levels, you know, somewhat near that. So they're only 5% of retail in the United States and 1% of retail globally. Now, to say that, you know, someone with that kind of market share is too big, I think, is being disingenuous.
Yeah.
And where the pressure is coming from, I think, is a feeling that they're just too good and fast and moving into too many new industries, so that the, you know, people are getting worried. They're getting scared. They're saying, like, they're just, you know, too good a competitor. And, you know, I don't think that's a great reason to break up a company. I mean, the current laws say, as you pointed out, you know, you have to hurt the consumer, you know,
right,
by, you know, raising prices or whatever. And they're certainly not doing that. And I think another factor at play is...
Brian, we're almost out of time. We have NPR National News we have to go to.
Okay, great. Now, I was just going to say Jeff Bezos, because he's the richest man in the world, is an easy target. You tag him, you get a lot of publicity.
Brian Dumain has written Bezonomics, How Amazon's Changing Our Lives and What the World's Best Companies Are Learning From It. I'm thinking it's a great Father's Day gift. Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Brian.
Oh, thank you, John. Thank you, Lynn. Really appreciate it.